Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're asking, are central banks in the endgame? Central bank policy has heavily driven both news flow and investment flows since the great global financial crisis. But nearly a decade on, investors are starting to question whether monetary policy can still be the only game in town for global markets. The Fed looks likely to raise US borrowing costs this year, and critics suggest that rate setters in Europe and Japan are running out of ammunition. So, up for discussion this week, do central banks still have the power to move markets? Will governments have to take the baton to support growth and inflation with fiscal policy? We start with the observation in some quarters that rate setters are running out of ammo. We asked Tekleng Tang, Asian currencies analyst in the UBS Wealth Management CIO, whether this might be the case, particularly in Europe and Japan.
It does seem to be the case, at least if you look at the market reaction. And the latest that we have got out of Japan is that where they did not expand their balance sheet further, and in fact, it even sort of invited speculation that they are running out of government securities to buy when they shifted from buying Japan government bonds to a regime of now targeting interest yields instead. So it all has invited speculation that central banks such as Japan and in Europe are running out of ammunition. I think the real issue here is that the balance sheet expansion that we have seen in Japan and Europe, for example, they are not translating to inflation simply because the velocity of money and the money multiplier is actually dropping. So in other words, when central banks try to increase the money supply, it is not translating into incremental bank lending and credit creation, and therefore there is a very limited impact on inflation. And as such, they are probably pursuing the wrong strategy on balance sheet expansion.
Philip Schuttler, who works in the global asset allocation team of the CIO at UBS Wealth Management, looks mainly at credit strategies. Does he think rate setters in Europe and Japan are running out of tools?
Well, we think actually that's not fully true. I mean, one just has to look at recent decisions, in particular in the Bank of Japan, to see that actually central bankers can get very creative when it comes to monetary policy, and they manage to come up with new ways how to conduct policy. What is probably true, where we would agree, is that they will most likely not go down further the route of negative interest rates. I think based on recent comments, both from England, from Japan, and also within Europe, central bankers seem to come a bit to the conclusion that negative interest rates are actually creating more problems than they are solving. But we do think that monetary policy will remain very easy, and we also think actually that it has been quite effective, for instance, in bringing the US economy back on track. I think one just has to look, for example, at corporate bond markets, how strong the issuance has been this year, with setting a new record almost every month, to see that this cheap funding backdrop is really helping and making its way also in the economy. So to keep it short, I think they had an effect and they will continue to have going forward.
So, do central banks still have the power to move markets? Brian Rose is a US economist at UBS.
They certainly still have the power to move markets, although increasingly it's only in a negative direction. You can disappoint the markets and send them down, but to actually lift markets by easing policy further, this is getting more difficult. And I think you can see that most clearly in Japan. They've gone the farthest in terms of being extremely aggressive in their monetary policy, and it's hard for them to lift markets by promising to do more in the future.
Do central banks still have the power? Definitely yes, says Douglas Rothstein, head of interest rate strategies for developed markets at UBS Wealth Management.
Central banks are still extremely important for markets. And of course, all assets are priced by determining the current value of their future cash flows. So this calculation uses interest rates. So mechanically, higher interest rates means lower asset values. So, for example, if central banks set rates over time in a way that is substantially different from what markets expect, then markets will move as assets get repriced.
Pim Fox is the author of Talking Stock on Bloomberg Radio and Television. Does Pim Fox believe that central banks then are in the endgame?
At this moment, you have a variety of games being played. For example, in Japan, they're still trying to reflate the economy and encourage investment, and they seem to be doing everything they possibly can in order to generate a little bit of inflation and economic growth. So, for example, just recently, the Bank of Japan saying it's going to start to target longer dated debt, which means they'll be selling those bonds in order to raise yields and steepen the yield curve, right? The yield curve is that sort of, you know, chart, that measurement that takes a look at debt over a certain period of time, whether it's short-term debt or long-term debt. Obviously, if you lend your money to someone for a longer period of time, you're taking a greater risk and you're going to be demanding a higher interest rate, a higher rate of return. But what's happened is there's been a huge compression between the very long end of the curve and the short end of the curve. The Japanese are trying to fix that by the target, that endpoint, the longer dated maturity. Central banks typically really only have control over the short end of the curve because that is what determines how much banks charge each other in order to lend money to each other overnight. So the Japanese, they're trying to ease, they're trying to flood the system with money. They're buying Japanese government debt. They're also buying equities through the purchase of exchange-traded funds in Japan. Hasn't worked, but that doesn't mean they're not going to continue to try.
Given these constraints on central banks, the next question to ask is, will governments have to take up the baton to support growth and inflation with fiscal policy? Brian Rose again.
This is a difficult question to answer. They certainly could use fiscal policy to boost growth and try to push inflation up. The question is, should they? And I think that depends a lot on which country you're talking about. And one issue that we have to keep in mind is that a lot of the advanced economies are facing population aging, and already their balance sheets, public finances, aren't in good condition. So they can use fiscal policy, boost the economic growth in the short term, but that has long-term implications. How are you going to pay off all of the debt that's created if you use fiscal policy now? So, and these are difficult questions. I think this is why you see so many governments reluctant to use fiscal policy, even though the economy is in a weak state.
What is Tech Lee Tang's view from Singapore?
Yes, they have to, and especially so in Asia, because the situation here is that the external demand, in the sense of the demand for Asian exports, is still very sluggish. So we are not getting growth out of an improving external demand. And it is also hard for growth to come by domestic consumption because the household leverage is still very high in Asia, which means that domestic consumer cannot spend if there is already a high amount of leverage. And therefore, governments really have to fill the gap here. So we have to rely a bit more on government spending, and a bit less can be expected from the external trade and from the domestic consumer. Fortunately, on a relative basis, Asian governments do have the fiscal capacity to spend a bit more. Because if you compare to the peers in Europe where the government debt to GDP is closer to 80 to 90%, Asian countries actually have an average debt to GDP level of about 40%, so it's much more manageable. And even compared to the US of about 75%, it is also quite comfortable. And of course, Japan being the most stretched country with 250% of debt to GDP, and so on their side is much lesser room on the fiscal spending.
We asked Philip Schuttler too whether governments will have to support growth and inflation with fiscal policy.
I think the mix will indeed shift a bit more towards fiscal policy, and it's probably also something we have already seen getting started in certain countries at least. I mean, the British government, for instance, made it pretty clear that they want to ease the fiscal policy to fight any Brexit consequences. In the US, actually, both candidates for the presidency are campaigning for higher fiscal spending, unsurprisingly so, but both of them, if they came to power, would put more money into schools, infrastructure, childcare, and the like. Trump also talking about border control, of course. And then finally, not to forget China, which is the second biggest economy. And also China has recently put a lot of focus on fiscal policy, spending more on infrastructure, etc. So this shift has already started, and it will probably move more into that direction also within Europe, which should further foster growth globally.
Does Pim Fox believe governments will take up the baton?
Well, it would be nice. I think everybody kind of agrees that it would be great if, let's say, the U.S. Congress got their act together and passed some kind of infrastructure spending bill that was focused and would actually trickle into the real economy. We've got to repair bridges, roads, airports, tunnels, ports, all those things. Has that happened yet? No. Is it likely to happen? No. We're obviously going through the campaign silly season, and no one knows really what's going to happen in November. But in the meantime, we do know that Congress isn't going to do anything. The European Union, I mean, they don't even have a unified banking policy to implement any of these programs if the governments were going to do so. And certainly Angela Merkel's government in Berlin, not interested in increasing debt and spending lots of money. Witness what happened with Greece and Portugal.
And a last word on the potential role of governments and fiscal policy from Doug Rothstein.
The different governments and their central banks, they're at different stages in the cycle. So in the United States, the Federal Reserve, of course, has hiked rates once and is likely to be hiking rates again several times over the next few years. The economy is close to capacity, close to full employment. Inflation, core inflation, is at about 1.6% and to be moving somewhat higher. So in the U.S., it looks like monetary policy in this cycle, it has or will soon achieve its goals. For other major currency areas, it's a bit different. In Europe, where core inflation is only about 0.9%, the ECB is still has big stimulus measures in place for the economy. And it's not clear yet whether the ECB will be able to achieve its targets on its own. In the case of Japan, it's much closer to what you're calling the end game. And the Bank of Japan has been extremely creative for some time now, but now owns a very large part of the JGB market as they purchase government bonds. And it looks like this morning they acknowledged that it gets difficult for the Bank of Japan to continue to provide very meaningful stimulus to the economy by itself. So the results of the meeting could be interpreted that the Bank of Japan is actually handing over the reins to the government and to fiscal policy to complete the task. So what they did is they basically said that they're going to buy bonds, government bonds, and not allow them to go significantly above 0%. So they're going to keep the 10-year yield close to 0%. And that means that the government is free to borrow and at no cost, actually, at zero cost, and to use those proceeds to spend to stimulate the economy. So it looks like this is already happening in Japan.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll be looking at what all this means for investors. Nearly a decade on from the global financial crisis, investors are starting to question whether monetary policy can still be the only game in town for global markets. We've heard from our experts whether they still think that central banks have the tools in their locker. But now we ask, what does all this mean for investors? First up, Tek Leng Tan.
I think especially for a currency investor, it really depends on in a particular country, how fiscal policy interacts with monetary policy. Because if, for example, in a country where fiscal stimulus can replace or reduces the need for monetary stimulus, then you could expect the currency to benefit simply because there is less need to do more easing and there's less money being printed out of the central bank. But in the case of Japan, for example, where they are in a situation where fiscal policy and monetary policy are both equally stretched. The Bank of Japan is reaching limits of balance sheet expansion. The government is hitting more than 200% of debt to GDP. Then in this case, very little levers to pull. So growth, if they want to achieve a faster growth and if they want to achieve a higher inflation level, it would have to come from economic reforms.
And what does all this mean for investors in Brian Rose's view?
For investors, I think the reliance on central bank easing to boost markets, that is starting to fade. But it doesn't mean that markets will fall apart or that this isn't a good time to invest. I think what it means is we have to rely more on fundamentals, and those really aren't so bad. So there were a lot of fears about what might happen after the Brexit vote, but it seems even the UK isn't doing so badly. The Eurozone recovery is holding up. US, China, other major economies, they're all in pretty decent shape. We expect corporate earnings to start to improve. So, you know, again, for an investor, look at the fundamentals more than counting on central banks doing something to boost the market.
Douglas Rothstein begins with the low-rate environment.
With rates extremely low, cash and bonds, of course, have been an important part of a diversified portfolio. But in this case, with cash and bonds having such low yields, we have to work hard for investors to find diversification and or higher returns on investment. So we need to look elsewhere. We need to make sure that portfolios are as diversified as possible and try to have some other tools as well. So, for example, here at UBS, we believe that hedge funds are still going to deliver diversification and interesting returns for investors, especially when compared to cash. We also think that there are opportunities in private markets where these managers can add value by investing in less liquid markets. So, of course, one has to be extremely careful, and it's important which investments that one selects and which managers one selects. But we believe that there are other opportunities.
And what does all this mean for investors? Philip Schüttler again.
On the monetary policy side, we still think those low rates will obviously keep cash and then very highly rated bonds unattractive. And we think this low rate environment is here to stay for a while. To us, that means that we have to look for more attractive alternatives. In the credit space, we have found some of them. We have just recently seen that credit can do very well in this environment with high-yield bonds or senior loans and the like doing fairly well. So we would still recommend to shift a bit away from sovereign bonds and high-grade bonds into credit. Maybe the focus shifting a bit more on the fiscal policy side to put a bit more focus also on infrastructure spending, and that should actually be a good opportunity for private debt investors, private equity investors who can move into these areas which are a bit more exotic, but they could benefit actually from a boost to infrastructure spending. So in particular for long-term oriented investors, we think in the private space there are a lot of good investment opportunities in this current environment.
And that's Philip Schüttler, bringing us to the end of this 103rd installment of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in a fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com, or catch up via iTunes, SoundCloud, or on your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. We'll be right back.